Good evening. It's 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, which means once again it's time for the other podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm John Hogue, the other guy on the other podcast. And you probably heard in the background, struggling probably with her headphones again. Is that what's up, Diana? How you doing?
I'm great. My headphones evidently are working on every other podcast I listen to, but not on this one.
Huh. Well, then how are you? Well, at least you seem to be able to hear us.
I can hear you just fine.
Okay. By the way, there is a button on the
The direct upper monitor. I know that's the one that should be, and I have it on. It's green lit. It's happy, but I put on the earphones and nothing.
Huh. Well, are you sure that that's not the green tally light for the USB? Try it with try pressing it another time.
Technical problems.
Yeah, did that help?
I hate technical problems.
Well, yeah, but it's how the techies like me make their living.
Anyway,
if there were never any problems, we wouldn't need engineers.
Well, look, there is this thing called the laws of thermodynamics, and basically, they, in summary, state you can't win, you can't break even, and you have to play.
And you can't quit.
Yeah, you have to play. It's the only game in town. Oh, yep. And so, what happens as a result of thermo? Is we die.
Yes.
And we had actually...
Speaking of broadcast professionalism...
And dying.
Yeah.
We have an obituary to do.
Yes. My good friend, the late, great G. Gordon Liddy passed away this week. I was often a guest on his... talk radio program. As a matter of fact, at the 2000, I'm trying to remember the year, 2008 CPAC, when our party got shut down by hotel security. This was a very famous, notorious, I guess it was, episode.
Oh, I still hear stories about it. when I was, my first CPAC, which was like 5 years later.
Yeah. Well, anyways, at CPAC 2008, we had rented a suite at the Omni Shoreham Hotel, and it was crammed with people. Mary Catherine Hamm was there. Andrew Breitbart was there. Michelle Malkin was there.
Twice the usual suspects.
Ace of Spades was there. Jim Hoft was there. Everybody who was anybody in the conservative blogosphere, including Franklin Raff, who was the producer of the G. Gordon Liddy show. And part of what got us shut down was that Franklin stood up on a sofa and led the entire crowd in singing the national anthem. And you can hear about 150 people singing, the national anthem. And it sort of was considered a disturbance in the hotel. They didn't share our patriotic fervor. But speaking of patriotism, G. Gordon Liddy, the man in charge, along with E. Howard Hunt, of the so-called plumbers who were assigned to stop national security leaks in the Nixon administration after the so-called Pentagon Papers were published. Now, folks, if you're not old enough to remember, Richard Nixon was a famous he was famous as an anti-communist before he was a freshman congressman from California. When
the Pink Lady.
Gohagan. Yeah, but it was Nixon who, with Whitaker Chambers, exposed the fraud, perjury of Alger Hiss, who was a commie spy.
My junior partner is having senior moments. Folks.
Yeah, and liberals never forgave Nixon for that.
No, they did not.
And so they had it in for him. And so you had this Pentagon Papers thing. And so this was during the Vietnam War. And national security was at stake. And a few laws were broken. Okay, let's.
The break into Segretti's psychiatrist's office was probably not a smooth
move. Not Segretti. You said Segretti.
I did, didn't I? I'm sorry. That's my mistake.
I can't hear very well in the.
Well, then put them over your ears properly.
Oh, shut up. That's better. Yes. But anyways, yeah. What was the guy who leaked the Pentagon Papers?
Ellsberg.
Yeah. Ellsberg. Daniel Ellsberg. Yes.
See, some of us are old enough to have actually been having to do reporting at the time, but
I was a child. I'm innocent in all this.
Well, you know, I was a teenager, but I was already the guy at least doing the rip and read teletype newscasting at small stations in Nashville. I hadn't quite graduated up to the Clear Channel outfits yet for that story. But I remember reading all that nice copy off of yellow UPI teletype paper.
There was a word for that kind of paper. Was it foolscap?
No. Foolscap is a very nice, fine stuff. This was just teletype paper.
Yeah, but I remember that yellow teletype paper. Well, we're sitting here reminiscing.
Well,
about
it was
this.
Yellow for UPI. It was white on paper in the AP machines.
Well, you know, all I really remember is that you could get kind of high off Ditto machine. my mom was a teacher. I spent so many years helping run off things, and
that may explain a few things.
You get anyway those machines. Actually, the liquid, the smell of it, always made me faintly high.
Well, it has an interesting solvent in it. It's not quite exactly sniffing glue, but close.
But G.
Gordon Liddy is a man with an interesting reputation, and reputation is something that, I'm going to miss Liddy, not only for his broadcasting, but for some of the stuff he did in terms of his acting, and some of the stuff he actually did in print. One of my favorite memories of Liddy had to do with an ad campaign he was hired for, a group of Chilean vineyards hired him to be their spokesman. And their pitch was, we've got hearty Chilean rootstock, but we've grafted the best French vines onto them. And so the ad campaign was print part of the ad line campaign was headlined, G. Gordon Liddy discusses graft. And I'm sure it made some eyes rolls in the Napa Valley.
Well, anyway,
him in Miami Vice.
Anyways, but the thing is that of all the Watergate conspirators, he stood out in that he refused to cooperate in either the congressional investigation or He did his time, and that, you know, there's an old saying, if you, you know, don't do the crime if you can't do the time.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And there was a certain kind of honor in that. I mean, what he was doing was criminal, but there was a certain kind of personal honor involved. But, you know, we brought up Miami Vice, and that reminds me of Florida, and that reminds me of a certain Floridian.
Speaking of scandals.
Well, speaking of reputations.
Yeah, we had a we have got a problem down in Florida. It would seem.
What do you mean we?
Well, I mean, I speak of the Republican Party, because I was I had someone come into the comments on my blog. And by the way, my blog is theothermccain.com. Just
please don't please don't confuse it with Hogwash.
Yeah. Well, anyways, yes. But theothermccain.com, we had a bit of a problem this week with Matt Gaetz. Who has been a very high-profile figure. He's often seen in the media.
Are we going to have Gaetzgate? Is that what's happening?
Gaetzgate, yes. Earlier this week, it was Tuesday, as a matter of fact, the New York Times came out with a story that Matt Gaetz was under investigation for some sexual activities. Well, Gaetz immediately fired back and said that he was the he went on Tucker Carlson to say that he was the target of an extortion scheme, and that this investigation allegedly is part of it. Well, when it first came out, you know, I was willing to give Gaetz the benefit of the doubt. And what it had to do with, and I, you know, I'm someone who I try to research these things. It was confusing at first. It has a lot to do with a guy named Joel Greenberg, who got himself elected as tax assessor of Seminole County, Florida. And Greenberg and Gaetz were apparently buddies. And they may have been, as they say, Eskimo brothers.
And here's the problem with this particular allegation is the young lady was 17, and the age of consent in Florida is 18.
I'm very familiar because of the, what do you call it? The, what was that? Who was that little free Kate Hunt?
Yes.
Kate Hunt, the Kate Hunt story.
Yes, well, that was a 14-year-old.
Yeah, well, anyways, but the they have a Romeo and Juliet loophole, so to speak, in the age of consent. But Matt Gaetz is 38, and that puts him way outside of it, and so. Today, after seeing more coverage of the story that had had some more details, and there's been a lot that's come out. For instance, the Hill, people on the Hill are leaking like sieves. What? Go ahead.
One short thing. I've heard this sort of thing. Okay. My problem here is that it's all anonymous sources. It's all stuff that the New York Times has reviewed, but can't publish. I don't know what anybody else is thinking, but I'm reserving judgment. I'm not. This is all a rush to judgment here. We are being led down a path that we're supposed to get all up in arms and furious. Until evidence is actually published, I'm reserving judgment.
On the other hand, Matt Gaetz is a guy who has led a life where stuff like this is at least on the surface potentially credible. I mean, it's not something that's outside of his observed behavior.
A couple
whether
of years it, ago, there was a bit
or,
of a minor kind of uproar where he was dating a 21-year-old. Well, 21 is legally adult in every sense. And so that, you know, even though, okay, he was 36 at the time and she was 21, and that kind of looks a little shady, but 17.
Well, okay, you know, I was 7 years older than my wife, but she was 23 when we met and 25 when we married. So, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, my wife is 4.5 years younger than me. That's one thing, you know. But anyway, so I did a little bit of a fake-a-roo on the blog. I started out, and it's at the top of the blog. It's called "I Saw Her Standing There."
She was just 17.
And I tell the story about how I've been watching Mike Piccelli's videos, which is true, by the way. Mm-hmm. But if you watch these videos, it's fascinating if you're a Beatles fan, which I am. But I had him playing "I Saw Her Standing There," which begins famously, "Well, she was just 17. You know what I mean? And the way she looked was way beyond compare." And that's how I led into what seems to be going on here. And again, you know, Diana says reserve judgment. People, the presumption of innocence still. It appears that this supposed sex trafficking investigation has to do with them using Gates and his buddy Greenberg using so-called sugar baby sites, like Seeking Arrangements is one name specifically. And when this came out, when this first came out, and Gates went on to Tucker Carlson, he says, you know, "It sounds like I'm being criticized for being generous with my girlfriends." And I'm like, okay. But then, if one of them was not 18. See, and by the way, I just have to say, I have warned my sons and warned my sons and warned my sons repeatedly. Online dating is for losers, A. And any hot to trot underage girl on the internet is actually an undercover cop. Okay. So the minute some underage girl online starts talking sexy to you, it's like, thanks, cop, and delete that account. You know, it's like, don't even begin to think you're going to get away with something like this.
But I don't understand how they're trying to build this case.
Me neither. If it's been under investigation for a year.
But I mean, it's
allegedly.
Well, no, I don't think I understand. This is a bunch of woke news organizations trying to pin a sexual misbehavior thing on a Republican. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I had a post, don't know much about biology, about these science. These are basically, you have a bunch of science deniers. CNN had a post up this week that says it is not possible for a person's gender to know a person's gender identity at birth, and there is no consensus criteria on assigning sex at birth. So if there's that level of basic science denial about XY and XX chromosome pairs,
well,
how do they make this thing work?
I have no idea. I do know one thing. Today I was volunteering at a clothing exchange, and we had a lovely rack of Easter dresses, and we had a very nicely arranged table of boys' Easter stuff. And the boys were, their parents were, of course, happy to see this stuff, but the boys were totally indifferent. They were running around playing tag, whacking each other with buckets until we took them away. And the little girls were like, they took one look at those dresses and it was, ooh, plus the shoes and the accessories. And every little girl was absolutely thrilled to try on shoes and pick a dress. Thrilled. Beyond thrilled. The boys, as I say, racing, chasing, whacking with buckets, being pursued and scolded by adults. That's the boys. The girls, shopping. There is a difference.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I remember there used to be a department store in Nashville called Harvey's. And one of the smartest things they did is on the fourth floor in a corner, they had a snack bar with a playground, and it was always full of boys. Mm-hmm. And they allowed the moms to shop in peace. It's one of the pleasant memories of my childhood, and I'm sure it's the reason my mother tended to shop at that store was because mm-hmm. she had a place to dump my little brother and me. But the same thing. The A&P grocery store had was across the street from a park with a playground, and so I'm sure that's one of the reasons she would go there.
By the way, I have been sitting here looking at the, and I can't remember, call the woman's name who wrote a book that got cited, of course, in Judith Butler's work. If you don't know who Judith Butler is, mm-hmm. she's sort of the doyenne of gender. Gender Trouble is actually mm-hmm. the name of her book. And
you're right.
And one of the sources cited in there, and it's often cited, and it's tip of the tongue syndrome here, but what it is a book about anomalies. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what it does and what they do is try to use sexual anomalies, right, to claim that there's no clear differentiation between men and women. Okay. Yeah. Now, these so-called anomalies are like 4 in 1,000. Okay. Yeah. In other words, 0.4%, and so it's
and until recently it wasn't that high because the survival of people with those kinds of genetic defects they didn't last.
Well, I mean, a lot of what it
so it doesn't
what it amounts to is using the exception to deny mm-hmm. the rule. As okay, this is a trick that the left has been using for a long time because mm-hmm. some people are different. Therefore, well, you know, and then just to deny the rule. Now, I am one of three brothers. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a father, a mother, both are deceased, but I am a man. My wife is a woman. We had 6 children. 4 boys and 2 girls, all of whom and all of the people I'm talking about were completely normal. Okay.
I wouldn't go that far with one.
Oh, you're talking about me. Okay. But the point being that this idea that you can't know someone's gender. Okay.
Well, first of all, people don't have gender.
French nouns have gender, but the point being that the idea that we don't know whether someone is male or female at birth, is so absurd. One of the things that they have done in terms of, I could walk out into the next room and get the book off the shelf. But the point being that, one of the things they have done is take a minor things like what do you call it?
I have
being
no idea.
Intersex.
But intersex,
syndrome with XYY and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but not only that, but things like certain female troubles. that can, and I'm trying to think of what it is, because it's not endometriosis, but it's something like that. But in other words, women having certain people having certain variations, right? Between, you know, they're anatomically normal, okay, but they have certain conditions that may make it difficult for them to, you know, that they're not what they seem. Do you see what I'm saying? Not or that they're subpar function, and it has to do with hormonal levels and things like that. Well, okay, but that doesn't mean they're not male or female, okay? And most of the people who claim to be transgender are anatomically normal. Okay, the problem is between their ears. Okay.
Well, yeah, but
most of our problems tend to be in our heads anyway.
Well, yeah, but I mean, basically what we have are people who are, what for all intents and purposes, what you should can justly call science deniers. What's interesting, though, is this idea that gender being a property of living beings as opposed to a property of words. It's interesting. I've been watching what's some of the gyrations going on in some of the European languages that are gendered. You know, the nouns, all nouns have gender. And so French is just struggling about what to do with having these additional genders. German is having some of the same problems as well.
Oh, the Germans, alles ist Orden. Oh my God, we can't stand it. We have no more order of our genders. No, stop. Don't do it.
Well, but
thank you. Thank you. I just now found the...
Okay, we'll go back to that story.
It is Anne Fausto Sterling is the name that I was looking for. Thank you.
Yes. Anyway, it's... but, you know, speaking of science denying, there is well proven since the time of physicians like Joseph Lister with smallpox vaccinations about the kind of immunity a vaccinated individual has.
John?
Yes.
Lister's is all about disinfection. The whole vaccination goes as far back as, heaven help us, Cotton Mather.
That's true. But the idea of, you know, the idea that one achieves immunity through vaccination in the same way that one achieves immunity by surviving a disease. And you see this interchange that went on between two physicians, Rand Paul and Fauci. I mean, it's, you know, and then this idea of we're going to have to carry COVID vaccination passports. It's like, you know, I'm going to walk into a movie theater and it's like Papera and Bita, you know? No, the answer
is... By the way, we mean Edward Jenner.
Yeah, Edward Jenner. That's right. But the idea...
Yes, I did come up with that without Googling.
Good. But the and smallpox vaccinations. But the point is that, you know, that's just not the way we do things. In our free society, because we have a certain level of privacy about our medical records. Mm-hmm. But secondly, other than opening a bank account or getting on an airplane or almost anything except voting, we show ID now. But we don't need internal passports just to go shopping at Lowe's.
Oh, hell no.
Kroger. So,
and I'm not doing it. No. I will not comply.
Well, you know, but I mean, what do you expect? We've got...
Oh, it won't stop there. It's the thin edge of the wedge.
Oh, look. And they're going to go for it big time. Mm-hmm. Basically, I'm being optimistic. I'm expecting the Biden administration to be essentially Carter's second term. That's the upgrade from Buchanan's.
there's that.
But I had a post up titled, How Confident Are They? And the idea is that during the last election, the Democrats did manage to hold on to the House. They did manage to take the Senate to 50-50, which flips it because they got their team into the White House, which means they got a vice president. But they didn't do well in the states. They are not going to control redistricting for the most part. So they're not going to have control over who gets locked out of House seats in states that are losing or who gets a new House seat because another state's picking up seats in the House. And so it's going to be a challenging year in 2022. And if you look at their legislative agenda, it looks like they're trying to ram through as much as they can, as quick as they can, because they know it's their last chance.
Don't know how that's going to work out for them. I mean, at a certain point, a certain proportion of their own membership is going to simply say, this is too much. It's just too much.
Yeah, but I mean, you have an infrastructure bill coming through. There were way less than half of it is about infrastructure. It's just hands out to goodies to favored businesses and not-for-profits. They're proposing the biggest tax increase in 30 years or so, and they're pushing gun control. And if you stop and think about it, Biden was in the Senate in 94 when all that stuff happened. Pelosi and Schumer were in the House, managed to hang on to their seats. If Biden had his mental faculties, he should remember the bathroom took in 94. And so, look, I think the whole thing is that this is the last hurrah for Biden, who's 79, and Pelosi, who is 81. Biden's, I hadn't had his birthday yet. He's only 78. Schumer's 70.
Yeah. But Nancy is 80 going on 81.
She actually just turned 81.
Did she?
I think so. I think she's had her birthday this year.
I thought her birthday was in May. Well, it's all right. Maybe. Whatever.
Well, but, you know, well, then she's, it certainly rounds off if I'm a little bit early. You know, I think they see the handwriting on the electoral wall, and this is their last chance to get stuff through. But whether they're arrogant and think that they've really taken over in any sort of long-term sense, or whether they're desperate, we're going to see the Democrats be incredibly, what's the right word, reckless for the next year or so. It's going to be incredibly ugly.
Well, this is what we're seeing now is a repeat of Clinton syndrome. Is that Clinton came into the office, and remember, Bill Clinton only got 43% of the vote.
Yeah, a lot of people
in 1992, and he came in as if he had a mandate. And like the very first day.
Well, Biden only got about 43% of the vote.
You mean the real vote?
Yes.
Well, anyways, but the point being that he acted as if he had a mandate.
He did.
And the same thing happened. If you remember, when last time Pelosi was speaker, they rammed through Obamacare. Obamacare on a party line vote on reconciliation at midnight.
And they're doing the same thing with the things like the alleged COVID relief bill. which is less than half COVID relief.
You know, and the only thing they have done, one of the things, you know, here we are in Democrat Agenda 3.0 now or whatever. Yeah. What they're doing now is they're pre-demonizing the opposition. You see, when the Tea Party broke out in 2010, right? The Democrats were unprepared for that.
But it doesn't work. And you're seeing they're being reckless. They're making a whole bunch of significant mistakes. They had a terrifically wonderful own goal, as far as I'm concerned. There's a little bit of change of staffing. CNN reported that you remember Richard Torres Estrada.
Oh, Lord.
He was going to be the diversity and inclusion guy for the
Special Operations Command.
Right. Now, when I've served in staff positions in the armed forces myself as an army officer.
You poor man.
Well, no, I was, just, you know, for example, a signal staff officer in a large headquarters. And we had an adjutant who did the paperwork, and we had the S2 who did was responsible for intelligence, and S3 who did operations. S4 was responsible for
logistics.
S5 was civil affairs. Mm-hmm. Basically, staff position 6 was the commander. It really didn't happen. And then 7 was the surgeon. I was in number 10 as the communications and electronics officer. And we didn't have a diversity dude.
When this happened, when Estrada came on, Richard Torres Estrada was appointed. It was last night we were doing the show, and I was looking at it, and I was like, this is insane.
Well, and the thing is. What got him was people found on his Facebook page a photoshopped picture of Hitler holding a Bible, put next to a picture of Trump holding a Bible, and you know, and it got fact checked.
Hey, Ginger. Oh yeah.
So you know, and people are going like, maybe this guy isn't qualified. Hell, I thought that was what qualified him for the position in this administration.
Right. It probably was what qualified him. Ooh, but, we like his social media. He hates.
But he's been sent off to someplace else. And here's another interesting thing that's happening potentially. Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution requires that the United States will protect the several states from
invasion.
And so the question arises, will that create a cause of action for a state like Texas or New Mexico or Arizona or California being swarmed by COVID-infected illegal aliens? We'll just leave that one on the table.
Oh,
meanwhile, it was April 1st.
I loved that article. Go.
And Stacey?
Yeah, my co-blogger Wombat sent an email to me and said, I'm thinking of doing something for April Fools. He did a post called "The Other McCain Sells Out, Dateline Las Vegas." And he had me selling the blog to Jeff Bezos.
For an undisclosed
amount of money.
Well, this is a capitalist organization, but we like to earn the money rather than just take it and run.
Well, yeah, anyways.
And boy, I'd bet Stacy in such a situation would have gouged him for all the market would bear.
Well, the funny thing is, by the way, is that in there, he actually links, because, right, Bezos bought the blog. He actually links using his PayPal, his Amazon account, links to where you can buy, for example, silver dollars, or what are known as silver dollars. The they're actually $47.99 is how much you pay. It's 1 troy ounce of silver, I believe that is. Is that what the, yes, it's
that's right.
1 ounce of fine silver. Yes, anyways, but he's talking about having a pretty good week in Vegas with all that. Anyways, and so he links down there. There's a link to my news conference, right? There's a link down there to my news conference. And I just want to say, I have not sold the blog because I'm never going to give you up, if you get my drift.
Well, on the other hand, I had fun in the comments section saying, yeah, but when is the sale of the other podcast going to MSNBC going to close?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and we're not for sale. But we do have yellow buttons and tip jars.
I'm going to get to the yellow button. But before I do, I want to tell you that when I started the other McCain blog, right? Okay, what year was it? 2008?
Yeah.
Yes.
Who was running for president at the time?
Obama and John McCain.
Right. And I left the Washington Times. Mm-hmm. And was on my own, and I was doing everything I could to trash John McCain with the idea that maybe they would be smart enough to buy me out, right? I mean, that's what you do. But they weren't that smart, and they weren't really running for president. That's the whole point of the John McCain campaign. It was a scam. All these never-Trumper types, they were paid to lose an election.
Well, we're not paid to lose.
Yeah,
out.
We're not. Yeah. Okay. Here's how we get paid. Okay.
Talk about the yellow button.
Okay, folks, if you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, you will notice near the top of the center column a yellow button. The yellow button has the word donate on it. If you will click on the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account. And there you can contribute dollars or yen or pesos or any euros, any form of rubles. We do take rubles,
mm-hmm.
Any form of currency, wherever you are in the world. They take it at PayPal, and that goes to support the blog and keep my wife happy, mm-hmm. and also to support the podcast. Meanwhile...
Yes.
Over at my good friend John Hogue's blog, Hoguewash.com.
In the sidebar, you'll find that tip jar icon, and basically it works just like the yellow button, except it goes to my PayPal account, and you can help support either the podcast or my blog that way. Or you can click on the icon of a hat down at the sidebar, and that will take you up to the Hoguewash store, where you can buy all sorts of ridiculous, silly stuff branded in various ways related to the blog. Or there was that mention of links to Amazon shopping at the other McCain. Well, you'll find that sort of stuff at Hoguewash as well, because both blogs participate in the Amazon Associates program, which you'll find bloggers all over the interwebs use that. When you use those links, the blog you're going through gets a small commission from Amazon, which helps support us. But regardless of the method you use, you need to remember the 5 most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please. Now, let's see.
By the way, speaking of selling out and the commercial thing, is that, my brother and I were discussing this Matt Gaetz thing. And, I was how terrible it was that, this shady business of sugar daddies. He says, well, if I ever won the lottery, no, Kirby, no, God made you poor for a reason. Okay. It's like, yeah, I wouldn't know what to do with that kind of money. Oh, I could think of some things, but,
If I won the lottery, I wouldn't change it all. The problem would be the magnitude of my stupid mistakes.
The first thing I'd do is establish a real foundation and do things that would amaze people. Mm. And it wouldn't be a make it very, very wrong foundation. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, the one thing, though, that is different between blogs like the other McCain and Hogwash is you're going to find news coverage there that and interesting stories that really aren't being circulated through the mainstream media. For example, there was that story about the BLM activists an Asian assaulter.
Yes.
Stacey, that was your cue.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was, where was I? Okay, so... I'm sorry, I was kind of dazed out there. But yes, there's been this spree of anti-Asian hate crimes. And this week, there was an arrest in Seattle. A Black Lives Matter activist and fervent Democratic Party supporter is accused of committing anti-Asian hate crimes in Seattle.
Meanwhile, in D.C., two underage girls were charged with causing the death of an Asian Uber driver.
Uber Eats.
Uber Eats.
A little different.
A little different. But the point is that two underage girls...
13 and 15.
Right. And so, you know, none of these people that we're talking about, a BLM activist or these two girls, are Republican. These aren't Trump voters.
No, they're not Trump voters.
But they're attacking Asians. So it must be white supremacy at work, right, Stacey?
Oh, yes.
We can twist it. You know, if you're convoluted, if you're determined enough, you can make it white supremacy somehow. But generally speaking,
everything is white supremacy, according to.
So words don't mean anything, right?
Well, if you look at Muhammad Anwar, who was the victim in the D.C. thing.
Poor man.
He could pass for somebody. First of all, he's an Asian in the sense that I believe he's Pakistani. But, genetically, he's Indo-European. You look at his picture, he could pass for a guy from Italy or Greece, or actually he wouldn't necessarily stand out on the street in London. Mm-hmm. So, white supremacy? No.
Yeah. Hey, if you watch the...
The microphone's over there, Steve.
Yeah, I know. I was just looking at something. But if you watch the video of this attack, it is just horrifying because he is it opens and he is wedged into the passenger side door, which someone inside is trying to close, and he's trying to keep them from stealing his car.
He makes his living.
Right. And he was 66 years old, a grandfather, and he came to this country. What year was that? 2013, I believe it was. Let me see. What? Yep. Yeah. Anyways, but this guy, yeah, 2014, he came here 7 years. So at 59 years old, this grandfather comes here from Pakistan, mm-hmm. and he's driving an Uber, delivering food. And what happens is he's trying to get them, and they just speed off with him hanging on to the car. And you see them, if you watch them, they swerve toward a light pole, apparently trying to knock him off. And then they go around the corner. You hear this terrible screech, squalling tires, and then crash. And then the guy who's taking the video goes around the corner, and you see the little thieves climbing out of the car, and there is Anwar's body on the sidewalk. And you hear, and I didn't realize this, but you hear one of the girls say, I lost my phone. And she was upset because she had left her phone in the car. And there
that's evidence. But
and this man is dying, laying on the sidewalk, dead or dying. And you know, it's just absolute no regard for human life.
But here's what's scary about this. Mm-hmm. If that had happened 10 years ago, even 15, 20 years ago as a carjacking, and it had been a couple of young boys, it would have been a sad story, but it wouldn't have been out of line. But now those young girls are essentially feral human beings, the same way that we were seeing boys coming out a generation ago.
What's going on? Okay, granted, tweens and teens can be really, really callous. They are so self-involved. They're so into whatever their clique is or whatever that they're, I sometimes think their reality, it doesn't jive with the outside world. But this
one of the things that's going on, Diana, is the dehumanization of others. This tribalism that is being encouraged by the Democratic Party, it leads these, I don't know what kind of environment these kids grew up in, but is there any reason if you watch this wet rhetoric, white supremacy, white privilege, white nationalism, they go on and on and just demonizing white people. What about you're a young black person growing up in an all black community, and that, which is what DC, most of DC is, I suppose. But if you're growing up in that kind of environment, you may not even think of people, as human. Anyways, I'm sorry I interrupt. Let me go see if I can kill some dogs. Speaking of
Marley's not having a good time.
Pet Marley for me.
Yeah, but you know,
John. I've been thinking about you. I've been saying for a while that the media and the Democrats, but I repeat myself, are trying to gin up a pogrom against conservatives, essentially. And I think that the whole painful, horrible, systemic racism, it's all white people's fault. I see that as part of it, but they're planning, they have to focus it down a bit more finely, because you're living next door to somebody who is helpful and charitable and all of this other stuff, and they happen to be white. That's not gonna fly. So you have to fine it down a bit. You have to change it to somebody, you know, you have to make it a secret and sinister cabal, like, you know, conservatives.
Right. But wait a minute, Diana, and let me continue with this, is that, as I said, these, you know, urban kids like this, I mean, if you're a black child growing up in Washington, D.C., you don't know any white people, right? Personally, you don't have any white neighbors in your community. The only time you deal with white people, right, is like a school administrator Or is it somewhat a cop?
An occasional cop, an occasional social worker, but occasional in D.C. But, you know, here's the thing. It's the whole thing is turning responsible authority into
the enemy.
Well, or the servant of the enemy, if, you know, in the case of maybe a black cop or something like that. But I mean, otherwise, why would you be trying a policeman for someone's drug overdose?
Because we have an 8, almost 9 minute video of a guy with his knee on a other guy's neck. That's why.
Yeah, but the point
to
is,
to be honest, this is not about reality. This is all about image.
And right, and an ounce of image to these people is worth a ton of reality if they can spin it that way. And that's the point. There's something that they can use as the seed to start a narrative, and they're going to run with it regardless of the facts.
Yeah, I've got a blog post up called "What Was George Floyd Doing?" Okay. And that's based on the testimony on Thursday of his girlfriend, who identified the man that George Floyd was with as being his drug dealer. Okay, the thing is that you know, everyone keeps focusing on, you know, Derek Chauvin, Neo Manek, everything like that. But it has been established that George Floyd had 3 times lethal limit of fentanyl in his system. Okay, where did he get that? Well, he got that from his buddy, Maurice Hall. Okay, Maurice Hall had a criminal record in Minnesota. Okay, by the way, Maurice Hall and George Floyd were both originally from Houston.
Houston, yes.
Right. Okay. Yet they were in Minneapolis. Why? Someone answer this question. Why do people move from Houston, which is nice and warm, to Minneapolis? I don't know.
Minneapolis is actually kind of, okay, they go by the airports. I've been through both. Houston's kind of run down, dingy, and kind of nasty. Minneapolis is modern, clean, and really nice.
Well, it used to be.
Minneapolis?
Yeah, they burned everything to the ground now. So, point.
But, you know, and there are people who move for jobs and various other things. But the point is that we now have this prosecution going down. And it's interesting, depending on how the jurors take this thing, you know, if there's reasonable doubt, maybe it winds up being manslaughter. Maybe it winds up with Chauvin walking. But the point is, it isn't going to be what it was sold in the first place any more than what you see going on with the January 6th stuff with the Capitol building.
Isn't that interesting?
No one's going to get charged with sedition. And most of the other charges are being degraded. After the judges started fussing at the prosecutors, it looks like most of the people are going to be charged with trespassing.
Yeah, but they're still in jail. They and their families are still being bankrupted. The process is the punishment.
Oh,
these
yes.
people are going to be ruined. They have people are being who were nowhere near the Capitol but just attended the rally are being tracked down and having their lives ruined.
And docs. But a couple of people have given me a call and thanked me for talking them out of going. So and they understand why I was advising that now. On the other hand, did you know that littering on the White House grounds is a misdemeanor as well?
That doesn't surprise me. Go ahead.
Well,
littering on my property was a misdemeanor and punishable by fine.
Well, do you remember that picture? Do you remember that picture of Biden kind of looking spacily out the window?
Yes.
Well, I have a meme under a heading called "Executive Decisions" over at Hogwash, and the thought balloon from Biden says, "Maybe the dogs need to pens too." Oh yeah, I mean, maybe the dogs do need depends. You never can tell.
They definitely need some bite guards. There's that. Anyway.
Yeah, but you're not going to see the much coverage of that sort of stuff, because we're going to have more silliness and things like pulling the All-Star game from Atlanta.
What insanity. You know, the whole thing is that Atlanta, frankly, gave us the horrible reputation we currently enjoy. But Atlanta is run by Democrats. What are they thinking? And by the way, who goes to baseball games? I mean, I used to, whenever I was home visiting my mother, I would take her and my dad at a certain, when before he passed, I would take them to baseball games because they loved baseball, and it was like, you know, no big deal for me at that point, but who do they think goes to baseball games? And are they going to react well to this nonsense? They're not.
Well, it's not so much of who goes to baseball games. It's who watches baseball games on television. Because if there's not enough viewers to sell ads, guess what happens to the...
Get woke.
Go broke.
Right. But what? So you got to be asking the question, what is going on here? Why the... Major League political bias. And if you go to hogwash.com, just scroll down a little bit, you'll come up with one of today's posts, which has a little table there that shows of the 27 cities in the United States where Major League Baseball is played. Two of them have Republican mayors.
Out of how many?
27. So Anaheim has a Republican mayor, and Arlington, Texas has a Republican mayor, and the rest of them are all Democrats. So why? Weird. Basically, you know, I think there are two things are about to happen. They're about Major League Baseball is about to discover that their flyover country support is about to crash and burn. Because local politics just may not be a good thing for the national pastime. You know, and it's like, what are these people thinking? It's almost like they're crazy, but crazy people are dangerous, Stacey.
Yes. We had a Nation of Islam supporter who was killed after attacking cops at the U.S. Capitol on Friday. And this thing happens every time there's this sort of a bombing or a shooting, something like this. People immediately start speculating about motives and whose side the attacker was on. Well, in this, you know, and usually you cannot tell until you have the identity of the gunman in this. Okay. Actually, it wasn't a gunman.
You would think that it's a basic lesson that you would learn when you get started in journalism to wait until you have proper information before you run your mouth. It was 53 years ago tomorrow that the 20-year-old John Hogue was the newscaster on the number one R&B station in the country when Martin Luther King was assassinated. Now, that's a quick lesson in getting the facts straight. But these people just refused to do it.
Yeah. Anyways, you had a lot of idiots speculating, but it turned out that the Noah Green, 25, rammed his car into a barricade, striking two police officers, killing one at the U.S. Capitol right about 1 o'clock Friday. He got out of the car wielding a knife and lunged at officers before being fatally shot. The Capitol police officer who was killed was William Evans, who had been on the force for 18 years. And, but anyways, and so it turns out, we know a lot about this guy. He was apparently, he was, everyone is pointing out he was a follower of the Nation of Islam. Yes, but he was also a man. He was under a lot of stress. He had lost his job. He graduated college a few years ago. He got a job. He had a major in finance. I don't know what he was doing, but his mental health, there were all kinds of red flags, as usual in these kind of cases. And the thing is that I they don't want to call it terrorism, but a lot of crimes, these lone wolf type attacks, are committed by people who have obvious mental problems. Okay. And whether you call it terrorism or not, but the combination of a bad ideology and a mental breakdown, it's very dangerous. And so the moral of the story, of course, is crazy people are dangerous. And speaking of crazy, I hear that boogie woogie piano in the background playing like crazy. And that tells me we're nearing the end of the podcast. And so 7 o'clock every Saturday night, 7 o'clock Eastern, that's the place to find us. You can find us with the Podbeam app. We'll be back next week. So thanks for joining us.
Good night, Stacey. Good night, Diana.
Good night.
And we'll
guys.
See you later. I keep going down the road.